Welcome to Scoop, where you get the scoop on this week's news. My name is Jenna, and this is Smarter News.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to Scoop. It is Monday, October 6th, and we're going to start things off a little bit different than I was expecting. I was expecting just for things to work today, you know, like I thought maybe I would sit down and the computer would just turn on and then we would just broadcast. Turns out that's not the case. That's not the case. And unfortunately, I'm having to switch up microphone usage just to even record this. And I'm sure you can relate, right? Were you ever in an office and you had this major computer issue, and then you would call the IT team, the help desk, and they would say, did you turn off your computer and did you turn it back on? And unfailing, it would always be like, no, I didn't try that yet. And then it would work. Well, we tried that. It didn't work. Still did not work for us right now, but we're going to just keep on keeping on. And it is of note, one of my very first news items I was going to talk to you about today is the fact that it is this year's very first super moon, which is a full moon that appears brighter and bigger than normal. And so maybe we can chalk this up to that, but that doesn't really serve as well for some of the other big news stories that are hitching a little bit on what's going to happen over the next 24 hours. So we're just going to keep it in mind. Before we get to the news, I actually have something fun to talk to you about, totally unrelated to the news, but related, unrelated, but related. And that is, I wanted to share with you two sort of pop culture items that are tied to the news that I think are worth your time. I feel like I never can just watch a movie these days and be entertained by it. Sometimes there's some politics involved or somebody's fighting over something about the movie. I just don't want to deal with any of that. You know, I just want to enjoy a movie. Well, on Friday night, my husband and I sat down and we ended up watching a movie called The Lost Bus. It's just out. Matthew McConaughey's in it. America Ferrera's in it. And it tells the story of a school bus that is trying to navigate getting out of the horrific fire in California in 2018 called the campfire. Those are three separate words. So it's not like a campfire, but the campfire. And this horrific fire, one of the deadliest and most destructive in California history, really national history, swept through this area of Paradise, which is a town of like 30,000 people, and completely took the town off the map. Just went completely through the town in this raging wildfire. And because of the speed of it, and you see this in the movie, it details a school bus driver that goes and picks up a group of kids and has to get them to an evacuation area only to find that the evacuation area is not available and now has to get them completely out of the area, but the roads are shut down, the fire has surrounded them. It is a true story and it is amazing. And listen, you know how it works out. I don't think I'm giving anything away. It's a good news story at the end. But even in the middle of the movie, I know it's a good news story and I'm still Googling. Wait, I just want to make sure all the kids are okay. Are they okay? Is everybody okay? It is just an unbelievable movie. I highly recommend. Substantial, brings up a lot of deep thoughts, but also is kind of this adventure, thrilling cinematic experience. And there's a lot of parts of it just that we can relate to our current news cycle when we cover wildfires, because they actually take you to the point of view of the spark. So you see the point of view of the school bus driver, you see the point of view of the teacher, and you see the children, but the camera angle brings you to the spark and shows you how fast it moves. And even just seeing that, obviously that's fictionalized, it brings an understanding of some of the big news stories that we've covered, including the wildfires that we saw in California earlier this year. So highly recommend that. Put that on your list. Second thing, just in case your computer doesn't work as well and you have to do something during the workday and you could feel productive about the following. I also found a really good book I want to flag for you. And this is a new book. It is a nonfiction and it is called Gunfighters. Let me go ahead and share it with you. The Gunfighters, How Texas Made the West Wild. How Texas Made the West Wild. I picked this up on a bookshelf just as I was heading out the door on Friday. I haven't been able to put it down I'm, you know, 50, 60 pages in, and it's a long book, but I can already tell this is going to be a significant one. And it tells the story of how this image of the Wild West came about for America. The author is very clear, Brian Boru, famous nonfiction writer. He's very clear. He's not making a statement about gun laws in America or gun culture or any of that. That's not his purpose of the book. However, as you're reading it, it makes you think about the American identity. And for somebody who, like myself, was born and raised in San Francisco, I didn't grow up around hunting culture, moved to New York City. Again, wasn't around a lot of hunters or anything like that. You know, I didn't have friends that owned guns growing up. It just wasn't part of our cultural experience. There wasn't any big statement on that. We weren't having political conversations at the kitchen table. It just wasn't what people did. It wasn't what it wasn't something that we talked about. And then I moved to Texas and suddenly things are different. Even just the way people are living. You know, I moved from New York City, the largest city in the country, to basically a town, there's no town to it, an area with a population of 600 people. That was a culture shock. Part of the culture shock was that there wasn't a police force that was doing regular patrols. I mean, you have your sheriff, you don't have a, like, you're not going down to the Walgreens and seeing the police outside, sort of like you would be in New York City or in San Francisco. And so people own guns. And it, just in the beginning of this book, I'm already seeing an explanation of sort of this cultural experience in America that was really defined. When I say cultural experience, this idea of the gunfighter, the Wild West, what does it take to be strong? What does it mean to be a pioneer? What does it mean to be self-sufficient? It's already telling the story. The book is already telling the story of some of the gunfights in the Wild West. And what the author's saying here is that a lot of the stories, even the ones that take place in California during the Gold Rush, even the ones that are taking place in Missouri, the ones that are in Oklahoma, often involve a Texan. So it's already a very interesting look at a part of American culture that still to this day is something that we look at that's very unique to us and tells a story about the American culture overall in a way that I hadn't thought of. So wanted to flag both of those things for you. And already in my reporting, it's funny how things kind of weave together. I'm going to pull this up for you. I pardon the little typing. If you're hearing it, I'm pulling up something that happened this weekend because I think this speaks to this quite a bit. You had the governor of Texas just yesterday stating that he was going to send the Texas National Guard to places that the president says are needed. And as I saw this, I thought this is very much sort of what the book is talking about, the Texan identity, self-sufficiency, and ready and willing to move in a moment for a certain cause. Now, whether or not you agree with that cause is totally up to you. But this is what Governor Abbott said. He said, I fully authorized the president to call up 400 members of the Texas National Guard to ensure safety for federal officials. You can either fully enforce protection for federal employees or get out of the way and let the Texas Guard do it. No guard can match the training, skill, and expertise of the Texas National Guard. They defend our country with pride. America must also know that Texas still has thousands of National Guards assisting at the border for border security. So why am I bringing up this particular tweet now on X? Because there has been a series of different rulings that have come up about where the National Guard can go into what states. The president has wanted to mobilize the National Guard in Portland, Oregon, and also in Chicago, Illinois. The governors in those states don't want this. And judges, and we're just getting a ruling this morning, specifically in the place of Oregon, are trying to temper the president's wishes with what is legal, you know, what can actually be done. Where can the president send the National Guard and to what areas and what's within presidential authority and what's not? And so we're seeing a clash in the courts about that. And it's playing out really as we speak. And then you have Texas there raising their hand saying, we're going to go. It falls in line with even the first few pages of this book and how Texas is positioning itself as a state in the nation that continues to drive culture and political conversation. So just flagging that. We have a busy week again, and I do want to flag for you that supermoon, because through all of the different things that we're watching, all of these different developing stories play out, this is something that if you look up at the sky on Monday night, you're going to see this wherever you are. And maybe it's a common experience that can bring us together. And hopefully we get the full moon out of the way and maybe we have progress. I don't know. It could be wishful thinking. But the super moon is the first super moon of 2025. It's going to be called the harvest moon. This is often because we can see a big moon like this in the sky. And it was an opportunity to actually harvest crops when we didn't have electricity. And this is a big enough moon that's really going to light up the sky if you have a clear night. We're going to get two other opportunities for a super moon that they're going to take place in early November and early December. So if you missed this one, you still have a few coming up. But basically what's happening with the moon's orbit is that it's coming a little bit closer to the Earth. So the moon is going to appear bigger and brighter. Now, the scientists are very clear. The moon did not grow. It's just going to look bigger. It's going to look bigger to all of us and be more substantial. And so that's something that's going to take place tonight. We're having that moment happen at the very same day that the Supreme Court is opening the courts for the arguments for this term. So the Supreme Court justices are working, even if they're not hearing cases, but they're going to start hearing cases today. And we're going to have several days where we're going to hear cases throughout the month of October. And we have a lot of really big stories that the Supreme Court is now a part of. And one of the ones I just mentioned, which is this question about presidential federal power and the power of the state, and where does the president get to step in on property if it's federal property? But if that federal property is in a state, how does that work? So that we may actually see the Supreme Court weigh in on that more specifically as these cases mature and get through different levels of the federal court system for just kind of a simplicity. So what we do expect the Supreme Court to take up are a few very hot topics that we've talked about all year long. One has to do with tariffs and trade. And again, a question about presidential power. We're seeing some questions about the power of the president to terminate jobs. That's something that this president started very early on in his administration, going back to the beginning of the year. Again, these cases need to mature before they get to the Supreme Court. And there's a whole bunch of cases that the Supreme Court can consider every term, but only very few are selected. So these are the ones that got through, and the Supreme Court said, we're going to be hearing some of these cases. And these are in what I would call more of a traditional way of hearing a case versus having the Supreme Court issue an emergency decision on a topic that needs something because it's timely. We're also going to see quite a few cases that have to do with the topic of transgender sports and also what states can make certain calls about sports in their state. So we're seeing both what I would put in kind of the category of cultural questions that the court is going to tackle legally, but also economic questions about overall legislation and who has the power and what do we defer to. So it's going to be a very active time in the Supreme Court. Although we're going to hear the cases, we don't get a decision until usually many, many weeks, months later, but we get to hear how the Supreme Court is questioning these lawyers. And this really is the byproduct of the pandemic, when we moved a lot of things online. And although certain court reporters or journalists were allowed into the Supreme Court to hear arguments in the past, they started to stream them. And now that has continued. So we actually get to hear what justices are saying, what the tone that they're using. Sometimes it can be a little confusing because you don't have the image. So you don't want to confuse voices. And because of the speed of conversation, sometimes that can be easy to do. So just words to the wise. But you can actually go to supremecourt.gov. Let me go ahead and pull it up. And you can actually listen. The Supreme Court website is very good. And you could pull up cases and actually listen to them as they're taking place. So fascinating process that we're able to take a little glimpse into. I want to talk to you about the shutdown, though. This is the story of the moment, and the shutdown is now we're getting into the better part of a week. The important thing to know about this shutdown are several folds. Let's just talk about the historic nature of it before we get to the politics of it. This is the first shutdown we've seen really since 2019, but it's the first full government shutdown we've seen since 2013. So sometimes we'll see that certain parts of the government are funded, and so we'll have a partial shutdown. But this is the first time we're seeing a complete shutdown. And this is affecting a lot of different areas of just the way that the government is working. As you know, essential employees, those that have to show up for work for the functioning, the essential functioning of government, they're required to come to work. They're not going to get paid. They're going to get back pay if they're a federal employee. If they're contractors, that can get a little sticky. But a federal employee will get back pay. But how long would you like to work without getting paid? It can get a little tricky. So we're still into this first week period. And there have been some reports that suggest this is sort of a given, that we would have a few days because the latest paycheck was just given. So people have a paycheck that gets them through, let's say, a week, 2 weeks time. But as we get closer to other paycheck periods, lawmakers could feel a little bit more pressure, and perhaps that starts loosening what appears to be a pretty strict standoff. What stands out most to me from reporting this weekend and doing research, listening to all the interviews and trying to put together if there are any sort of openings here, is the fact that it doesn't seem that lawmakers are talking at all. You know, when asked, when the highest ranking Democrat in the House of Representatives was asked, you know, when's the last time Democrats have talked to the president or talked to Republicans, he said, well, it was last week at the White House. So that doesn't show that there's a lot of text messaging, WhatsApping going back and forth, that there's phone calls happening. Maybe it is happening in the background and we don't know about it. Maybe. We always leave some space for that. But we're not seeing that. And that's what I would tell you is what we should watch for. Do we see a meeting take place? You have the Speaker of the House saying he's not calling lawmakers back into Washington, D.C. to just do other work. The government is shut down. He feels that they have done their work. Republicans had enough in the majority in the House of Representatives to pass a temporary spending bill and pass it off to the Senate. The Senate is where it remains sticking, that we're not seeing enough movement there to change how people are feeling about this temporary bill so that the shutdown could unfreeze. It is up to the Democrats in the Senate to decide if they want to do that. And they're just based on votes. We're going to get into the issues in just a moment, but just based on votes. In order for a bill to progress in the Senate, you need 60 votes. Republicans don't have 60 votes. They have enough votes to pass a simple majority for legislation. So once you get past a certain procedure and you have to vote on a bill, whoever has the majority can stamp that bill and get it through. But it's the procedure that needs to take place that enough lawmakers say, okay, fine, pass this legislation on for a final vote. This is what happened in the spring, where Democrats decided, okay, listen.
I solved a big snack problem in our household in a very simple way. My children love eating berries, and so do I, for not just the taste, but the vitamins and nutrients, fiber, all the good stuff we want on a regular basis. The problem? We all know what it's like to pick up a berry we just bought, and it's already growing fuzz in the fridge. So I've switched to buying frozen berries, and a favorite I look for now is Washington Red Raspberries. Did you know 90% of frozen red raspberries in the United States are grown in Washington State and mostly grown on family farms who harvest them during peak ripeness and clean and freeze on location, sealing in all that freshness, taste, and great nutritional value. So now I use frozen raspberries in our yogurt or smoothies as a sweet treat. And I love that this means I can support local American farmers and have a healthy snack for my family that withstands the test of time. You can find Washington Red Raspberries at your local grocery store or Costco. And how do you know you're getting the good stuff? Well, you just take a peek at the packaging and look for product of the U.S., and then you'll know you're on the right path. Oh, and if you want some fun recipes and more information, go to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. And you're going to find recipes, health tips, retail locations, everything you need to make frozen Washington red raspberries a regular part of your routine. Overall, it's just a smarter choice.
We're going to vote to just allow the Republicans to vote on this temporary funding measure. We're going to allow the vote on this legislation. We're going to vote no on it. The Republicans are going to pass it. But we feel like that's the right move. Democrats don't feel like that's a right move right now. because they want more concessions from Republicans on a particular part of legislation. So what's sitting in front of all the lawmakers right now is just a temporary funding bill. It just funds the government for another few weeks at current levels. It doesn't do anything new. There's no new hot topic to tackle. It just gets them to November. Now, Republicans, and you're going to hear from Speaker Johnson, will say, that's all we're trying to do. No big deal. Like, the Democrats are talking about something that we have to deal with in December. Well, I mean, December's not that far away. Let's do a day count. Day count. How many days left in 2025? Are you ready? I'm going to be scared. 87 days are left in this year. Even fewer days are working days for Congress. The Democrats are like, yeah, okay, but we still need to figure this out. And now we have a little leverage and we would like to figure out this healthcare legislation that we're concerned about. There are certain subsidies that the government has provided under the umbrella of Obamacare. I don't like that term. It's the Affordable Care Act that was passed. When President Obama came out later and said that he kind of liked the term Obamacare, it started to be used more. But basically, the most recent sweeping healthcare law that was passed over the last decade or so, that has provided a certain amount of subsidies that the government has put forward that some argue will keep healthcare costs lower because the government is providing some money. And without those subsidies, then our healthcare costs will go up. That's what Democrats are saying. They're like, listen, we don't want to let this debate go to the end of the year because we want to figure it out now. We want some certainty. All of our voters, Republicans and Democrats, are going to start getting letters because their health care and their insurance may change by the end of the year as they're going into 2026. They're going to get these notifications that their health care costs are going to go way up. Let's handle that now. Let's not mess around. Let's just figure out this part and we got to negotiate over it. So this is where the impasse is. And you do have Republicans talking about, well, Democrats are trying to provide subsidies to illegal immigrants. You have Democrats saying no, federal law prohibits that. And it's a real messy. That's all I can. It's very, very messy. There's a lot of claims going back and forth. And here's just big picture what I think as taxpayers, everybody should know. Yes, the government does provide subsidies on things like Medicare, for example. If someone goes into a hospital and they need emergency care, then they will get emergency care. The hospital is not checking, you know, someone's immigration status. They're going to treat that person, but they're also going to bill that person. And if a hospital is receiving federal funding, there is a certain portion of our funding that will go to unpaid bills in the hospital. And sometimes those unpaid bills may be for someone that doesn't have legal status to be in the country. Also, there are those that had temporary legal status in the country. They were seeking asylum. And in that time period of seeking asylum, they're not technically illegal immigrants. Although some on the right would call them that, they have legal status to be in the country because they're pursuing asylum. In that particular category, some subsidies can go to that particular group as reimbursement for hospitals that are receiving federal funding overall. I hope I have that correct. I have a certain lack of confidence in myself in discussing this because it is so hard to find neutral sources about where our taxpayer money is going. The bottom line is that sometimes our taxpayer money is footing the bill for those that need it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be someone that is illegal. It could be someone that's getting funding through Medicare or Medicaid, right? Those are government programs. So that particular conversation really needs to be fleshed out more. But it's not entirely clear. And Republicans are going to say, this is the issue. This is the issue. Democrats want more subsidies for people that don't deserve it. Democrats are saying, no, we don't. We want to make sure we have subsidies for everyday Americans. And my understanding of the issue is that under that umbrella, a very small percentage of money can still go to hospitals that are treating people that aren't going to be able to pay. And those people can look and be a lot of different categories. It could be your everyday American that doesn't have health insurance and is not going to be able to pay the bill. So, tough topic there. Where do we stand? Let's go first to Hakeem Jeffries. He is the highest ranking Democrat, and he's really been the one that's been speaking most about this issue along with Senator Schumer. We showed you Senator Schumer last week. So let's hear from Congressman Jeffries now.
Well, unfortunately, Republicans are lying because they're losing in the court of public opinion as it relates to what's going on right now. We are standing up for the health care of hardworking American taxpayers, of working class Americans, of middle class Americans, and everyday Americans who have seen over the last several months Republicans pass their one big ugly bill, largest cut to Medicaid in American history. Hospitals and nursing homes and community-based health clinics are closing all throughout the country, including in rural America. If Republicans continue to refuse to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits, tens of millions of American taxpayers are going to experience dramatically increased premiums, copays, and deductibles. And that information from their insurance companies is going out right now. Now, federal law clearly prohibits the expenditure of taxpayer dollars to provide health care to undocumented immigrants, period, full stop. And no Democrat on Capitol Hill is trying to change that law.
So that's what Congressman Jeffries says. Let's take another perspective and let's hear from Speaker Johnson. He's the highest ranking Republican on Capitol Hill. Let's take a listen.
Sir, this has nothing to do with that. It's another red herring. The reason the government is closed is because Chuck Schumer and 43 of his Democrat colleagues in the Senate have decided now to vote multiple times to keep the government closed. We need them to turn the lights back on so that everyone can do their work. The House did our work. We passed a bipartisan, clean, continuing resolution to keep the government open. And what did Chuck Schumer send back in response? His counterproposal would add $1.5 trillion in new spending for a simple seven-week stopgap funding measure to keep the government open so all these appropriations bills can be finished. And they want to claw back $50 billion that we put in for rural hospitals to prop them up. They're not serious. This is not a serious negotiation. They're doing this to get political cover because Chuck Schumer is afraid that he won't win his next reelection bid to the Senate because he's going to be challenged by a Marxist in New York because that's the new popular thing out there.
So Speaker Johnson saying political pressure is the reason why Democrats are doing this. And they're standing up to Republicans on this particular issue because they believe it's a winning issue. Let me ask you this question. Who wins the government shutdown? Who do you think is winning the fight here when it comes to a government shutdown? Do you see Democrats or Republicans with the upper hand? Does any party emerge from this unscathed as a hero for the American people? If you listen to both sides, they're positioning themselves that way. The question I have for you, is it working? Does a shutdown work that way for you, the voter? What will happen now over the next several weeks, we're going to get some polling. Now, remember, a lot of polling is done through landlines, old-fashioned. We're calling people and we're asking questions. And this is why there's some thinking in polling science that certain Americans are underpolled versus others. And it tends to be that more conservative or Republican voters are less likely to participate, is the popular thinking, than those that are Democrat or more progressive. At this point, my question for you is, have you ever picked up the phone and answered a poll question like this? These polls will sample 1,000, 500, 1,500 Americans and then extrapolate that on how the entire country is feeling about this. I'm curious how you feel about this. Let's go to the bigger point here, which is something that perhaps we can take a look at together. As I pull this up, it's a handy dandy tool and something fun to look at periodically when you need just a reminder of what's important. What I'm pulling up here is the National Debt Clock. You can go to usdebtclock.org and you can see our national debt, which is just ticking up moment by moment. Are we at 37 trillion? I mean, the number is so big, it's hard to even look at and read. The debt per citizen, this is maybe easier for us to wrap our head around, is $110,000 and growing. The debt per taxpayer is $326,000 and growing. By the way, sometimes people actually pay what they believe is their debt to the federal government as a way of trying to pay down debt as an act of goodwill. I don't know. I've never met somebody like that. Sounds like a good person. But this is a reminder of what is at stake here when we're talking about government funding. There's just a question overall about how much is it costing to keep America up and running? And where and how are we using that money? And that's a question for Democrats and Republicans alike. And it's being put into this kind of this tipping point here on this particular story of this particular healthcare subsidies. But there's a larger question here about government funding overall. I want to pull up one more voice for us because I was reading this earlier. You may remember Maya McGuinness. She is the president of a bipartisan committee. It's a committee for a responsible federal budget. It is a think tank in Washington, D.C. And this presents a different point of view that takes us out of the politics for a moment, just for something we should consider here. Shutdowns, I'm reading from their press release. This is from Maya McGuinness, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Shutdowns don't save money. They waste money. Under shutdowns, we pay federal workers not to work and rent buildings that aren't being used, all while requiring costly shutdown planning, inefficient allocation of government resources, and a reduction in the services available to the American people. We should avoid a shutdown and keep the government funded. Beyond that, we need a plan to actually reduce our massive deficits, and that should include extending discretionary spending caps. The last thing we should be doing is coupling a CR, that's a continuing resolution, or appropriation bills with new debt finance spending or tax cuts. Here are the things our political leaders have failed to do this year: present a full president's budget, adopt a congressional budget resolution, and enact a single appropriations bill. Let's not add keeping the government open for the new fiscal year to that list. So what they're bringing up and what's important here is that we are essentially, think about running a company month by month. A big company, a national company, month by month. Lawmakers are just sort of piecing together what they can do to keep the government funded, and they're not putting together a plan. You know, here's our 2 or 3 or 5 year plan. This is how we're going to spend our money. This is how we're going to see it. It doesn't mean that they can't change it, but this is our viewpoint. This is how we've come together. And this is the sort of habit that we've all been lulled into. And quite frankly, it does not matter if it's Republican leadership or Democrat leadership. I'm sure there's some great statistics on this somewhere, but if you look at recent years, they've all held the majority at some time, and they've all failed to do some massive sort of budget spending, that massive budget planning that involves both sides and a real view for the American people, where there's some wins for Democrats, some wins for Republicans. It just hasn't happened. That's not the way that things have been working out. And if the political leaders believe that they are winning here, then there's no incentive for them not to do that. There's no incentive for them to change, because in some way, somewhere, some political consultant is telling them, this is working. You're going to get the upper hand here. The question is it? Is it working for you? Caitlin is bringing this up. She says, my husband's employer took a 19% increase, 0% to employees. My company took a 23% increase and passed on 7% to employees. Both increased our out-of-pocket premiums. She's saying that healthcare premiums are going up significantly, and both her husband and Caitlin are offered insurance through our employers, and the employers are trying to absorb that cost by passing on a little bit to them, because they probably have to in order to make the math work. What will actually bring down healthcare costs? Is government subsidies, which is really your taxpayer money just used in a different way, is that the way to do it? Some would say yes. Others would say no. That's really a question about philosophical question about how our money should be used, and whether or not government subsidies into different industries is a wise use of taxpayer money, or if it interrupts the working of the free market. There can be really good arguments on both sides. That would be a great debate. Let me try to work on that for you, because it'd be really great to have two people talking about it. You know, either this is a really good use of taxpayer money because it helps the free market provide more access to people, and others can say this is a bad way. Taxpayer money should not be involved here because then it disrupts the free market, and you know, we don't know what anything costs. That is something overall I'm sure that you've experienced in healthcare. You go in and you're like, how much does a sick visit cost? How much does a broken arm cost? How much does a prescription of antibiotic cost? You can get that through like an urgent care clinic, because you're often paying out of pocket up front sometimes. But you know, what does anything cost? If I asked you what a carton of milk costs, or what an egg, you know, a dozen eggs cost, or some apples, you might have an idea. When it comes to healthcare, we really don't have that as a consumer. And one of the questions is why? So that's something that is a longer conversation, but hopefully this is helpful just to kind of think about, well, you know, what's working and what's not, and how do you actually feel about how do you actually feel about this government shutdown overall? Kathy says this, so no part of the Supreme Court is affected by the government shutdown? No, Kathy, not right now. Surely some aides may be affected. You know, a lot of people are working to support lawmakers, support the Supreme Court justices. They will not necessarily collect a paycheck, but they will be operating as per normal because it's deemed an essential service. So just something to keep in mind. Some parts of government are working, other parts are not. You know, if you're going to DC for a visit and you want to get into some museums, this could be a tough time to do that. So this is going to be one of the big stories of the week. I'm going to touch on another story very, very briefly. You are going to be hearing a lot about what's happening in the Middle East. And really, the next 24 hours is seen to be very pivotal. We have a proposal put forward by the White House as we were going into the weekend that was a peace plan that the president first talked about earlier in the week and then seemed to suggest that there was a growing consensus from both Arab countries in the Middle East, as well as Israel. And the big question is Hamas. It was about the release of the hostages that Hamas still holds. This was a key part of it. But also another key part of this agreement would be a totally new governing system for Gaza. It is detailed. There's a lot of different points to it. And negotiations are taking place right now in the Middle East with American leadership, leaders from Arab countries, from Israel. We have a lot of different people involved. And there seems to be a collective thought that there's an opportunity here. The question is, what does that actually bring us? We've seen a lot of these deals fall apart. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this right now because it's really in motion as we speak. And we're just going to be something that we're going to have to watch. Could this be the end? Could this be the end of this conflict? That's what the stakes are. And we're coming up on the anniversary of this terrible terrorist attack in Israel that happened on October 7th. Here we're coming into October 7th tomorrow. Sometimes that adds a little bit more momentum because of the desire to try to put everything together where there can be a more lasting peace. That's the hope. We'll see if the momentum carries us through to that. I'm going to leave you with a soundbite today. We'll keep an eye on all of this news. We have a bunch of other stories we'd like to watch. It's going to be a little abbreviated today on Scoop, and thank you for hanging with us through our technical difficulties. I just wanted to play for you just a quick soundbite from Jane Goodall. She was an amazing woman that passed away just last week, and she was going to be speaking at UCLA. She was still very active. She was 91. She died of natural causes. That's what has been shared from her team. And she was on a speaking tour at the time. And one of the things that she was going to be doing is that one of her institutes, or a namesake institute, was going to be announced on Wednesday, October 1st. So we've been going through some interviews and some of her commentary, and she definitely became, I don't know, more political, but I think of her research when it comes to being with the guerrillas in Africa. A lot of her research was being done in Tanzania on wild chimpanzees. Some of the things that she talked about was how studying animals gave her perspectives on human beings as well. And she spent decades studying these chimpanzees in Tanzania. So there was this interview that I saw of her, a clip of it this week. And I thought it would be a good way for us to sort of finish on and reflect on and maybe give us some things to think about as we're dealing with all of these really big news stories. So I'm going to leave you with this. Thank you for your support of quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news, even when technically we're not that smart and we have these issues that come up. I really appreciate it. And I apologize. I hope to get them fixed very soon. But this is Jane Goodall. Hope you guys have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
I look back over my life. I look back at the world I've left behind. What message do I want to leave? I want to make sure that you all understand that each and every one of you has a role to play. You may not know it, you may not find it, but your life matters, and you are here for a reason. And I just hope that that reason will become apparent as you live through your life. I want you to know that whether or not you find that role that you're supposed to play, your life does matter, and that every single day you live, you make a difference in the world, and you get to choose the difference that you make. I want you to understand that we are part of the natural world. And even today, where the planet is dark, there still is hope. Don't lose hope.
Thank you for believing in quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Every time you join us or share or save our content, you help us build a solution in news. And we are so grateful. We have a few other ways you can support our mission, from joining our insider community Scoop, to shopping our gear at our Smarter Shop, to just telling a friend. The best way to do any of this is to visit smarternews.com or follow us at Smarter News on social media. Don't worry, we put all of this in the captions so it's easy for you. Plus, we added our email just in case you want to drop us a note. We always love hearing from you. Thank you for helping us deliver news smarter.